This summer, there is a huge soccer tournament. Maybe you've heard of it. Unfortunately, the United States men's team did not make it, but Iceland did. And since you can't cheer for the U.S. this summer, raise a glass of Reyka vodka and cheer for Iceland. Go to Reyka.com, R-E-Y-K-A.com, to get Team Iceland gear and find a viewing party near you. Real fans drink responsibly. Reyka vodka, 40% alcohol by volume, 80 proof, distilled from grain. Copyright 2018, William Grant & Sons, New York, New York. Hey everybody, this episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Franchise Hockey Manager 4, which is on sale right now for the Stanley Cup Final. You can get Franchise Hockey Manager 4 right now for 75% off, just $9.99, and you can see if you can bring your favorite team to the Stanley Cup. Franchise Hockey Manager 4 is the most hockey ever, featuring not only all the teams and rosters from this year's NHL, but every team and season ever throughout the league's history, plus tons of international competitions and foreign leagues as well. There is no other hockey strategy game that comes close to Franchise Hockey Manager 4 in terms of depths and ways to have fun. So check out Franchise Hockey Manager 4 today for 75% off, now just through June 10th. It's just $9.99. Get it on Steam or right from us at ootpdevelopments.com. today.
Well, here we are on the eve of EA Play and E3. We're going to do a special podcast for you covering the news that comes out of EA Play as early as Saturday evening, and then another in the days that follow, or that one will be at our regularly scheduled time next week, depending on what does or doesn't come out of Microsoft and Sony's press briefings. But before we get to all of that, we've got a special interview with Scott Drader from the awesome Super Mega Baseball 2 in this episode. It was conducted by Mr. Rich Grisham. He's also here with me now. But first, we're going to hit on some recent news related to NBA 2K19 and Madden NFL 19. All that would have been swallowed up by everything that's about to come, so we wanted to get that out there first. Rich, what do the listeners have to look forward to with the interview that you've got later on in the show?
Well, Scott Drader, who is no stranger to the show, but it's been a while because he's been, you know, working his butt off getting Super Mega Baseball 2 out the door, joined me for a really interesting, wide-ranging conversation talking about what his desires and goals were for Super Mega Baseball 2, some of the different things that went into it and why. We talked a bit about the whole games with gold versus being sold for retail price on PlayStation. Talked about some of his thoughts and experiences with his original game being on the new subscription services, and just hit what it's a lot about what it's like just to make a video game these days and how challenging it is for so many reasons. It's a great interview. Scott is a great guy. And anybody who likes Super Mega Baseball or just likes sports or sports video games will get a kick out of the interview. Scott's a great guy and did a great job.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it. I haven't heard it yet, but I absolutely love that game and recommend it to anyone who's a baseball fan or really a sports gaming fan or could become one. I think that's a great introduction to it. But let me ask you about another game that's kind of arcadey, Rich. Mario Tennis Aces just had its online demo, and I know you spent a little time with it. What did you think of it so far?
I thought it looked great. I thought it played great for the most part, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun when the full game comes out. I'm not really much of an online player except against my friends in Madden or in FIFA or in anything like that. And this was an online demo. It's really basically a giant beta test for the online functions. I know that the Mario Tennis Aces game is going to have a single-player story mode, which I'm much more personally interested in. But I played it quite a bit, and my son played it as well, and he's not really a big sports fan, and he had a lot of fun playing it too. So overall, it's very good. It's charming. There's a certain amount of depth to the gameplay. There's a lot of different shot types. You know, you can't just be successful without learning how to play the game. It's a bit overwhelming at first because in the demo they just throw a lot at you because there's a lot going on to play the game, the right different kinds of shots and things like that. So it can be a bit overwhelming because they have to throw a lot at you in a short amount of time. I have a feeling that the full game with the story mode will be a little easier paced and a little friendlier to people who may not sort of want to be out there, like the Smash Bros, Nintendo Pros, and things like that. Like, there's clearly going to be a bunch of people who are really good at Mario Tennis who are playing online. But overall, I left very impressed. I was going to get this game anyway. I've already got it pre-ordered, and I feel even better about it. And overall, two big thumbs up for Mario Tennis Aces. A lot of fun.
Well, that's good to hear. We haven't had much luck with the tennis game so far this year.
I don't have any doubt that this will be the most fun tennis game coming out this year. No doubt.
Yeah, I thought it was strange. I think it was today that a new ad came out for Mario Tennis Aces.
With Rafael Nadal in it.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah, that's really curious because he is exclusive to AO Tennis, right? He is not, as far as we know, he's not a character in Mario Tennis Aces, right?
As far as we know.
So that's really strange. At least we know there was some data mining done of that demo where people were able to discover like 16 characters, and they've never confirmed them, but apparently they're in. And we saw the list of that. Of course, it did not have any real life tennis players, but it just caught me off guard because why is he promoting it's, you know, maybe not a direct competitor, but it's still another tennis game. Kind of weird to see someone like that show up in a different game. Contractually, it must have been fine, but it just is a strange fit. I don't really know where that came from.
Well, I mean, I think it's actually not a strange fit. I think it's fantastic, right? I mean, Rafael Nadal is the best tennis player in the world who's not named Roger Federer and is very widely known. And I think it's actually a match made in heaven, right? Like a beloved character like Mario and the various, you know, people, various characters in that universe teamed up with a real world tennis player. I think it's really great. So, yeah.
How much, Rich, though, how much of a tennis game is Mario Tennis?
Oh, it's a lot of tennis. I mean, it's a true tennis game. Now, granted, there's power-ups and magic shots and stuff like that, but it's still tennis. You know, you have to win, you know, the points in the regular scoring, you know, 15, 30, 45. And, you know, it's funny too, my son, again, who I mentioned is not much of a sports fan, asked me a couple questions. He's like, what does ADV mean? I'm like, oh, that means it's your advantage. If you win the next point, you win the set or the game. And then I'm like, oh, you have games and you have sets and you have matches. That's why you might hear somebody say game, set, match. And he's like, what's a break point? I'm like, oh, that means that you're going to break the guy's serve, because usually the person serving wins more often than not and stuff like that. So it's real tennis, because
I'm actually learning about the sport. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it actually is. So, you know, similar to like Mario Golf, right? It's golf. It's not, you know, something other than golf. There's, you know, certain tournaments that have different kind of power-ups and different kind of things like that, but in a similar way to how like Golf Story, there's a lot going on in Golf Story, but it is golf. Mario Tennis Aces, it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of tennis in Mario Tennis Aces.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, I'd seen screenshots of it, of what's called, I think, Adventure Mode, which is, I believe, like a single player, almost, I don't know if it's a story or what, but it didn't look like tennis was happening.
Well, again, I haven't done a whole lot of research. I'm just telling you what I have played is all centered around
tennis.
Sure. I know there's a single player story mode, and I'm sure it's, again, I harken back to something like Golf Story, right? There's a whole story going on, but eventually for you to, you know, accomplish whatever you want to accomplish to advance the story, you're going to have to do something golf related in Golf Story, just like I presume it's going to be something similar, where you're going to have to do something tennis related, and again similar to Mario Golf, right? Like it's a lot of the same sort of things. You have different characters and storylines and things going on, but at the end of the day, you gotta do something related to the sport to move it forward.
All right, so moving on to a little bit of Madden talk. This is less about what the actual game is going to be. We already talked about some of the features that have been revealed for it, and we know it's going to have a presence at the EA Play press briefing. Where I believe, based on the schedule they laid out, I believe the focus will probably be on gameplay related, maybe their new animation system. So that'll be something to look forward to. But we got an interesting development today, because it hasn't even been 2 weeks, right, since Madden was announced. I don't think it's even been 2 weeks. And we find out today, Terrell Owens, who's on the cover of the Hall of Fame edition, he announced that he is not going to attend the enshrinement ceremony which is an interesting development here because, of course, he's on the cover of the Hall of Fame edition. The Hall of Fame game and then the enshrinement ceremony that follows are literally just a couple days before the release of Madden 19. So EA was certainly planning to use those dates as kind of a launching pad for its release. This doesn't necessarily mean they can't promote the game, obviously, and they may very well use whatever advertisements, commercials that they were going to run before and during the game on NBC and the ceremony on NFL Network. But these were great opportunities for them to get more exposure for the game and basically free advertising, having Terrell Owens up giving a speech. And he's been in the news quite a bit recently, kind of some publicity stunts. I saw him begging for a job with the 49ers, which I see these they're basically publicity stunts. And I feel like he's just trying to get his name out there. And EA loves that. And that's part of the reason why they would have signed him. But I think EA erred here by not getting certain assurances in the contract they signed with him, such as you have to attend the enshrinement ceremony. It would seem like a necessity for this. Now, I saw several people on Twitter with the thought that this might cause EA to change the cover, change, you know, to a different Hall of Fame athlete that's going in this year or whatever it might be. And I think that's an overreaction. I don't see any reason why the game wouldn't release as is. Terrell Owens is still a Hall of Famer. He's still going into the Hall of Fame, but he's just not going to give a speech that night, and his presence isn't going to be there in the days that lead up to it. So it's an interesting situation, and it's more just from a marketing standpoint that we talk about this, Rich. But, you know, the cover athletes have certain they're expected to do certain things, and I don't know if this was one of them, but I think – EA probably thought it would be.
Yeah, it's certainly not what you want there with your cover athlete, even if it's not the standard edition or even if you have multiple cover athletes. I mean, what you want with your cover athlete is somebody who will not generate controversy and who best mm-hmm. represents your game. Mm-hmm. Now, as you mentioned, EA knows who Terrell Owens is. Yeah. And controversy follows him everywhere, rightly or wrongly, fairly or unfairly. Controversy follows him wherever he goes. And so it was a risky choice, but he's also a very popular former player, right? He, whether you liked him or not, whenever he played, he produced big numbers, which is why he's going to the Hall of Fame. And I don't even know the reason why he's not attending it. I don't know if he's said why, or I really have no idea.
It's because he's offended that, I don't know if he said it, but it's pretty obvious he's always been offended that he wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Right. So to me, that's, yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, I certainly can't get in the head of a Hall of Fame caliber player and why you would be offended. To me, I always would have thought that just being voted into the Hall of Fame, no matter how you got there, would be good enough. But hey,
that's what fellow Hall of Famers have been saying on Twitter today, basically replying to him, saying you're penalizing yourself here. The Hall of Fame isn't losing, but you are missing out on one of the greatest days of your life, basically, from their own experiences going through it.
But from EA's perspective, I don't see it. I honestly think it'll wind up being a non-issue, right? It's a short-term controversy in a, you know, an ocean of controversies that show up and wash away every single day. I mean, it's just unbelievable the amount and volume of different things that people get upset about and outraged and conversations about here, there, every day on social media. So honestly, I think like 99.99% of any of these things, this will become a non-issue very, very quickly. So ultimately, I think it's a non-event, but you know, it's certainly not the optimal outcome for EA in this situation.
So the main news of the week, though, Rich, is NBA 2K19 was officially announced. This has become a tradition, really, over recent years as far as the game getting its first unveiling during the NBA Finals. LeBron James is the cover athlete for the 20th anniversary edition, which is a $100 edition of NBA 2K19. Now, it's the 20th anniversary is what they're calling it. It's quite literally only the 19th anniversary of NBA 2K. For some reason, they decided to bump it up a year and call it the 20th anniversary. There's been 20 games in the series, but that's not does not equal anniversary. They've changed their own definition of what the anniversary is because NBA 2K10, they marketed as the 10th anniversary, which it was. But for some reason, they're calling this one 20th anniversary, which fine, but then they can't do it next year, too, if they do. I would laugh.
They can kind of do it if they really want to. They're the ones who get to say what the anniversaries are, I suppose.
But yeah, I guess.
It would be a little awkward to have two consecutive 20th anniversary editions. Besides, We all know that 2019 is when the 20th anniversary of Out of the Park Baseball comes out. So really, they won't want to get an R way because they would just get drowned by the wave that is Out of the Park.
I'm sure that's what they did. They didn't want to battle with Out of the Park over who has the most prominent 20th anniversary next year.
We're all, you know, we worked on this together. We're like the NBA and the NHL, sort of making sure the final games don't go on the same night. Yeah. We've had our people get in touch with their people, and we've worked it all out.
Yeah. Well, they're moving out of the way, which you can totally expect of a game that sells 10 million copies a year.
Exactly. Exactly.
They move right out of the way of a
small little indie game.
Yeah. So. Great move on their part. $100 for that. It comes out September 7th. So that is the last year's game. NBA 2K18 was the second earliest an NBA licensed game had ever released. Now this one supplants it and becomes the second earliest an NBA game has ever released. So it's September 7th, which if you look at and wonder why EA moved Madden up to the beginning of August, one of the reasons is certainly the competition in the middle of September, and now NBA 2K moving to the front end of September would have given only Madden a week to a week and a half of its own before NBA 2K arrived. So it was almost a necessity for Madden to move up, and it made a lot of sense for them doing that.
Well,
but yeah, so
It's really good for us, right? Because we get a little time to breathe and really sink our teeth into the games. And games like FIFA and NHL will get some more time to spend with as well. Because we'll be almost ready for something new and different now, as opposed to lamenting that, oh my gosh, FIFA and NHL are coming out a week after this or that. So
let's hope FIFA and NHL have maybe moved back, because otherwise you'd be looking at them a week or two after NBA 2K, which is still. It's still a difficult time for sports gaming fans who want to play multiple games. They'll get clumped together. But we are getting spaced out a little bit here, at least because of Madden.
And the funny thing is, FIFA is the game that should be, you know,
should be out earliest.
That's when the European football leagues start. And so that's never made sense.
Or move it till July, where NCAA football used to be. And
there you go.
Yeah. Because otherwise, you're going to have. I would have to think NBA Live is going to release on this same date, because they don't want to give NBA 2K that advantage. But then EA is going to have to move FIFA and NHL back out of its way.
No one's really talking about it, but as you keep moving these games up, you're shrinking the development windows more and more. And I know the team has probably known this, but it doesn't matter whether you know it or not. At the end of the day, you've got a finite amount of days and time to put the game together and to get it stable and to get it, the builds out there. So I got to believe that, and you might say, what's 2 weeks or what's 3 weeks? Well, 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks times 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 people winds up being thousands of man hours that you don't get. So and it almost feels a little bit, Brian, like this year's Madden. And again, there's going to be, I could sound foolish after EA Play, but it feels like this Madden, you know, by being moved up by, what is it, 4 weeks, is
3 to 4. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a bit of a transitional Madden, right? I mean, last year was the first on the Frostbite engine with Longshot. I don't, you know, and again, I know nothing, but you know, moving it up another month just really dramatically reduces the amount of time that you have to do stuff. And it's already hard to do that in an annual release anyway. So, but hopefully it then sort of resets the clock and lets them get back on a on a schedule that gives them the full development cycle. And the same thing with NBA 2K, right? Like they're shrinking their team's development time. But conversely, these games now, these AAA games are so big and have so much going on. It's not like you can do these monstrous new modes or monstrous new improvements every year anyway at this point. So, you know, it's an interesting perspective. Overall, I like it. I think it's better with the games getting spaced out and with us just getting some of these games earlier.
Yeah.
It'll definitely be interesting.
Yeah, well, let's wait and see how September lays out, because we still don't have release dates on Live or FIFA or NHL or Pro Evolution.
Yep.
Or maybe we have Pro Evolution. I'm not sure. I don't remember if they set the date, but we have a little bit of info on that game. But so a lot of people will be wondering, is this $100 edition worth it for me to buy? So the first thing you're going to get in the $100 edition is that it releases on that September 7th. It releases 4 days before the standard $60 edition. So this is something that EA has done and Sony has done with MLB The Show in recent years, which is you're going to get to play early, but only if you buy the more expensive edition of the game. So it used to be, up until last year with NBA 2K, it was simply pre-order the game, any edition of the game, pre-order it, and you're going to get to play a few days early. So that's the first unfortunate development with this. And you're going to get 100,000 virtual currency, which is $25 worth if you were just to go and buy it on the marketplace. You're going to get 50,000 My Team points, 20 My Team League packs, 10 My Team Heat Check packs, LeBron James My Team card, a LeBron James My Court design. If you buy the physical edition, you're also going to get a poster and some stickers and a wristband. So basically, if you break down what they're offering, you only want to buy this if, one, you play a lot of My Team, because this is going to get you started in that mode pretty strongly. Or two, you really need to play it those 4 days early, because otherwise you're losing money. If you don't play My Team, you're going to be losing quite a bit of money by buying this. So it just comes down to whether you want to play it early. We know, Rich, there are people who are happily willing to pay to play games early. But that's essentially what it comes down to. It's that or if you play My Team.
I will never tell people how to spend their money. Everybody knows what a dollar means to them. I loved this past year's NBA 2K, played it quite a bit, but it didn't get into it until probably a month and a half, maybe 2 months after it came out, when I got into basketball mode. To me, early September is not basketball mode. I'm not thinking about basketball as NBA basketball until Christmas, really, because that's sort of when the NBA gets
unofficially it starts. Yeah, it unofficially seems to start with the Christmas Day games.
And so I personally won't be doing anything like spending $100 to get the game early, nor will I be, you know, participating in any of that stuff. But on the other hand, for those people who this is what they do, and there are lots and lots of them, I'm sure they will happily spend the money and they'll enjoy it and they'll get their money's worth, because it's worth it to them for all those packs and perks that you talked about. It's worth it for them to be streaming it 4 days early or whatever. Like, it's completely worth it. It all just comes down to what you want. The good thing is they're being straightforward and honest. They're like, you want to play it 4 days early? Buy this $100 version of the game. So they're being clear. The fans know, everybody knows, and God bless you if you want it. I probably won't be picking up NBA 2K until October, November. That's just me, unless I get like a nice Amazon deal. But if you, as you remember, Brian, last year, and NBA 2K wasn't, I don't think it was on the Amazon. No, it wasn't. Otherwise, it
there's really,
it.
Yeah, there's very few sports games that you can actually get the discount on through Amazon now.
Mario Tennis Aces, $47.99.
Yeah, that's Nintendo. But like the EA Sports games, no, 2K doesn't seem to be in there. Sony, every Sony game, it's not just MLB The Show, every Sony game, including Detroit and what was the one before that? God of War. You could not even pre-order them, let alone get the 20% savings.
Yep. So again, you know, I believe in the free market. I believe in the power of people spending their money or not spending their money. And if you want to do it, go for it. It's cool that it's there. And there's plenty of people like me who are like, yeah, that's cool, but no thanks. I'll pick it up a little later and be happy with that.
It's a bummer you're going to miss out on that sticker sheet, Rich. LeBron sticker sheet.
Hey, man, who knows where LeBron is going to be when this game comes out?
Well, that's why they don't have him in a jersey on the cover art. The last thing, Rich, the Prelude is back. I think this might be the third or fourth straight year where we have a Prelude. It's basically a demo, but it carries over to the full game where you start your My Career story mode, and you get to play a small portion of that, start it up, and then, like I said, continue it when or if you buy the game. So that's August 31st. And I don't remember, did you do the Prelude last year? I know I did, and I really did not like it, and that really got me off to a sour start on the game. But hopefully they've improved my career. And we'll have to see whether VC has been toned down a little bit as far as how they designed that mode specifically around VC and made it artificially so much of a grind that it's almost not enjoyable for a lot of people anymore. But I also look for better writing, hopefully, out of the story, because there's so much potential. There were a couple of years where where my career was really good. And so the Prelude will offer the first glimpse, really, of what kind of changes they've made and whether it's going to turn out to be something more enjoyable.
Oh, I always play the Prelude, right? It's you know, it's going to be only a couple of hours. To me, that's important. I don't have the time to commit to long 50, 7,500 hour kinds of commitments, generally speaking. I mean, I will play that amount of the game over the course of 9 months or so, which I do, obviously, with a lot of these games. But to me, yeah, I've done the Prelude. It's cool. I always like getting that little taste of the game. I guess it doesn't, or it hasn't yet done its job. It might do its job this year, which would get me to pre-order the $100 version. I mean, it would take a lot for me to do that, but, you know, it's possible. But I'm definitely going to check out the Prelude. It's fun, and I like the, you know, how it's sort of centered around the college experience a little bit and all that kind of stuff, too. So I got a kick out of the Prelude. And again, it's a free demo. There's it's all upside, no downside.
All right, well, that'll do it for this portion of the episode. As we mentioned at the top, Rich Grisham, you've got an excellent interview coming up here with Scott Drader from Super Mega Baseball 2. So everyone, stick around for that, and then check back with us this weekend as we cover the news out of EA Play and E3.
Yes. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Press Row podcast. As always, thank you so much for listening. We got a really fun episode this week, something that we've been hoping would happen for quite some time, and now we've finally been able to make it happen. We have Scott Drader, the co-founder of Metalhead Software, with us. And of course, he is best known right now for Metalhead Software's fantastic game, the darling of the Press Row podcast and many others as well, which is Super Mega Baseball 2, the follow-up to Super Mega Baseball, which has long been a favorite of not only, obviously, all of us on this show, but in the sports game community. Scott, welcome back to the show. It's been quite some time.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. It's good to be here again. If somebody would have told me when we finished the first game that it would be this long before joining you on here again, I think I would have freaked out. But here we are.
Well, you probably would have freaked out anyway, right? I mean, making video games is hard, no matter what.
Yep.
So let's start with today, right? I mean, we're going to talk a lot about a lot of different things, but let's start with today right now. How are you feeling about Super Mega Baseball 2 as we speak in early June of 2018? The game's been out for over a month, I believe, or if not over a month, around a month. Yep. What's going on with it? How are you feeling? What's the community telling you? What are you thinking about it? What's your overall feeling about it right now?
Hey, the game shipped, and you know, the community seems to be pretty happy with what we've done with it. And it's summer here, and we're not slaving over our computers too many excessive hours right now. So that's great. We're really happy with the reception. Everything we changed. Like, I mean, we really rebuilt so many pieces of this game that And that led to it being a long development cycle. But we changed a lot of stuff. So there were definitely, you know, we were worried to some extent what people would say about or think about, you know, in terms of things that they liked about the first game changing or some things like totally, you know, there's some pieces that aren't there in the same way that they were before and stuff. So you worry about what the reception is going to be with that stuff. But I think things have panned out pretty well.
So I could certainly sit here and talk about Super Mega Baseball, but I'd love to sort of hear, you know, if you had to give I don't want to say the elevator pitch because I don't want you to feel like you got a rush, but from your perspective, you know, you're the designer, the creator, this is the second version of a game. Again, we'll get into a lot of these details. That was very much a labor of love. But if you had to describe to somebody, what is Super Mega Baseball 2? What, in your words, what is this game and why, what in your mind makes it the special experience that so many people believe that it is?
I think it's a really pure distillation of some really good, innovative, fun Twitch mechanics that are hard to find these days. There's a lot of big, complex products out there, and SMB is a really streamlined, just really fun pickup to play, a new set of game mechanics that are quite different from anything that I've necessarily or that I've played in baseball games in the past.
So one of the comments that I hear, and I certainly feel the same way myself, is that, yeah, Super Mega Baseball is easy to pick up and play. However, the controls and the depth of the gameplay are on par with the big boys like MLB The Show. Now, is that something that you set out to do specifically, or is that something that sort of advanced over time? Because I know when we first, you know, met, one of your goals was to make a game that everybody that likes, you know, sports, or excuse me, everybody that likes video games could play. But obviously over time, you know, there have been a lot of mechanics that you've built out and designed and tested and modified and thrown out and built new ones and stuff. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure you hear it, you know, how does that make you feel when you sort of hear those, easy to play, but, you know, complex in a good way to master? And is that something you set out to do?
When we were kind of drawing up what this game might be back in like 2009, like utterly naive, no idea how this was actually going to happen. But, I think the initial plan was something a little bit simpler, less sophisticated on the sim front, but the game being accessible to a wide audience was always part of it right from the beginning. But I think over time we maybe realized that having it be accessible but also having it be pretty sim heavy are reasonably compatible. You know, it's that making a game accessible doesn't necessarily mean that it can't have a lot of depth to it. You just have to be careful how you design the interface to that depth.
So with the pitching is my favorite thing. I love the pitching mechanics. There's obviously some similarities between the original Super Mega Baseball and the new one, but there's also some differences too. Talk to me a little bit about sort of the design of the pitching, what you wanted it to be, where it wound up, and some of the key decisions that you made over the course of getting this game put together.
The pitching mechanic that's in SMB, it's funny because we might have talked about this back in the day, but the pitching mechanic that actually went into Super Mega Baseball 1 was like version 5, and it was we rebuilt the pitching mechanic from scratch. Like we had 5 completely different things in there and just nothing. We wanted to do something new there. Nothing was clicking. And then I think the mechanic that actually shipped was probably the last piece of the core game to get finished. So you're of course worried about something that comes together really late. It's like, we haven't had time to balance this. That went out in the first game and ended up being, you know, like it was one of the areas of the game that people thought was, you know, one of the best things about it. So that was a huge surprise. With 2, we didn't go like really 2 wasn't about like, and I'm actually talking about the whole game, not just the pitching mechanic. Like we made a conscious decision not to mess with the gameplay too much. We said, there's a good thing here that not enough people have seen. We need to refine it. We need to refine it. We need to, there's some specific things around the edges that we need to add to it, but mostly we need to present it in a, you know, a little bit more of a broader appealing way. But yeah, pitching an SMB2, really it's a refinement of SMB1, and we made a conscious decision that that's what it should be at the beginning of the project.
And of course, one of the big differentiators, or I don't even know if it's a differentiator, just one of the core tenets or fundamentals of Super Mega Baseball, not only 2, but also the original, is the notion of ego, which is kind of like a difficulty slider, but it's also more than that. We've talked, and it's been a couple of years, obviously, we've talked about sort of the genesis of ego. What does ego mean to you now, and sort of what, how did you refine it, and what do you want it to explicitly do and mean for players of the game? And if you're not familiar with Super Mega Baseball, I don't know if I'll explain it right, but basically ego is a slider that you can attach that will make your experience more or less difficult. But also will generate, you know, in the various modes, you know, sort of more or less rewards as well. And there's a lot more to it. But again, talk to me about ego and your overall approach to it, and what, how you sort of came up with it and stuck with it and modified it for Super Mega Baseball 2 from the original.
Yeah. Ego was like, I have to go back to like 2009 again on that one, because there was a decision way back about, like, how are we going to do difficulty in this game? And the idea was, the thing we settled on right from the beginning and built around this idea for years, was that everything difficulty related was going to be kind of like a on a continuum. Nothing was going to change. Like, there was going to be no sort of like discrete change in mechanics or some new thing that shows up on the screen that isn't there when you're playing on easy, or some fundamental change in the mechanic that only is introduced later in the difficulty curve. That was kind of something we decided on way back. So that meant, you know, there's a number in the code there. There's a number between 0 and 1, and the whole game has to look at that number and make, you know, whichever area of the game it is, has to adapt accordingly to that number. And the idea, like, that was just born out of like experience playing sports games. Well, not even just sports games, just games over the years myself and you know, the crew that was working on the game. You know, that you run into things in games a lot where you feel like it's really hard to find the difficulty that you're in, that like really that zone that with, when a game's too easy, it just, you know, you can lose interest, and when it's too hard, you get frustrated and you want to throw your controller through your TV, but you want to be in that zone where you feel like you're right at the edge of what you're capable of in the game that you're playing. And you know, that idea combined with like a continuous difficulty setting that could kind of keep you right at that flow was sort of like the core design for the system. And then maybe the most interesting thing about what we've done with it for the second title is just like how it's a part, how it exists, how it coexists with the competitive online mode. So it's the same thing in the single player game as it was in the first game, in the sense that, you know, you can configure it per mechanic, and it does, there's you know, the batting, pitching, base running, fielding, and it does different things depending which of those mechanics you're playing. There's a few additional things that it does in SMB2 that it didn't do in SMB1 there. But in, the most interesting thing, I think, is just how it's used in online. And what we do there is depending on the long-term estimate that the back-end systems actually determine your skill to be, the higher the ego you're going to play. The higher your skill estimate, the higher your ego is going to be. So it's kind of this system where when new players come in, they'll be matched up in what is ultimately an easier game. And as they get better, they'll play a harder and harder game against people who are better and better at the game. And you know, that was kind of just like driven out of this idea that, like, if we're going to have this really twitch, really skill based game, you're going to have an extremely wide spectrum of users, of user skill. And you can't just put those people into the same game. That the game needs to adapt for their skill level. That's just the nature of the game. But yeah, I think that probably was the most interesting change to ego for 2.
And then of course you have Mojo on top of that as well. You know, what was your goal with Mojo, and what are some of the experiences you had in sort of combining, or not combining, but like, you know, you have to make all of these systems work together. You got your ego, you got your mojo, then you got your gameplay mechanics, and then you mentioned it, right? You got to hit, you got to pitch, you got to run the bases, you got to feel. There's a lot going on under the covers. I imagine there's a few more lines of code in Super Mega Baseball 2 than there was in the original. So how do you sort of figure out the best way to combine all of these things, especially as I mentioned with like mojo and ego, to sort of put it all together?
Lots of long deliberation in the meeting room, honestly. We sat down and talked about this stuff for ages, and you know, half the work is in just weighing the pros and cons of doing things one way or the other, and eventually you make a kind of call on the way we'd sit down and really just think, if we do it this way, is that going to over time kind of go off the rails and just not work, or is that something that we can kind of keep on that nice, keep the user on in that good flow mode with? And I think with Mojo and the game's new fitness system, we probably spent 3 days just talking about that before any code ended up getting written. And then after that, it just comes down to endless. Those systems went in early, so we actually, like, relatively early, I suppose. So, especially Mojo. Fitness was a bit later, but there was a long time to just play with it and make sure that it responded to the right things. We've even tweaked it a little bit after launch, and I'm happy with where those systems are at. But the difference, like Mojo and Fitness, the idea with those mechanics are really to drive kind of like your bench utilization, and really just to add some emergent stuff. And when you're playing seasons, you don't want to sit down before every game and feel like you're playing with the same team or feel like there's not something happening within your team. So Mojo and Fitness are both really about, You gotta look at the state of your team like a manager and think about what the best starting lineup is and think about, you know, who really is available on your bench and who you should let rest a game or two. That's kind of the type of gameplay flow we're trying to go with those mechanics.
You mentioned the teams, and this is something that, you know, it's hard when you're playing with a Major League Baseball licensed game. It's hard enough to sort of understand your team and who's going to perform well in what situations and what the best matchups are. And that's when you even sort of have at least some understanding of who these people are that are in your lineup, right? But with Super Mega Baseball and Super Mega Baseball 2, obviously it's not a licensed game. These are teams that you've created and characters that you've created. What went into and what was your overall mindset in sort of creating these teams that have to have distinct characteristics that could be recognizable? So, you know, because you do have different teams that have different characteristics, right? Some teams are more power hitting. Some teams are all about the starting pitching. Some teams are all about the speed. Some teams are balanced. What is the approach, and how do you sort of come up with that right mix and then put it into play and then tweak and adjust? I got to imagine there was a lot of iterations you had on the teams. What's your overall approach with that?
It probably just goes back to, you know, like even like RTS mechanics, StarCraft, you got your three factions or whatever, they all have to have their strengths and weaknesses so that you get interesting. You know, it's just having, we could honestly, that stuff is still based on real baseball. Like whether it's not attached to any real sort of teams, but the ideas behind the teams and their strengths and weaknesses are just trying to highlight the you know, types of strengths and weaknesses that you would see across real baseball teams. Then, of course, we try to attach a lot of fun. You know, you raised an interesting point, which is like, well, now your users need to have a hook to remember this stuff, because it's a lot. Even in our game, there, you know, 16 teams, 21 players per team, that's a lot of players to you know, start to remember and get a feel for. So we tried to come up with some really distinctive teams and memorable teams and a lot of fun names. And you know, oftentimes you can kind of tell by the appearance or the name of the player what their thing might be. So we try to drop hints in there about what a player's thing might be in the presentation. And you know, it hopefully it's not too hard to get a feel for what the strengths and weaknesses of the teams are based on the way that it's presented. Like we didn't go with too many stats or attributes on the players, and you know, there's a pretty quick summary of like what an individual team's strengths or weaknesses are. So it all comes down to the interface and how much you make your players read to get a feel for what they're playing with.
Personally, I love pennant race mode. I think it's just what I get the most out of. It's new for Super Mega Baseball 2. Has the reception been what you were hoping it would be for pennant race mode? And what are some of the things that you've seen happen that maybe you expected and are happy about, or you that weren't expected and you're just like, huh, that's interesting. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Pennant race is that has been, you know, maybe the most exciting part of the launch for us, because it's a totally new thing for the game. It's the online play, but it's also like the meta game for the online play. So that's been like a huge learning experience, like on pretty much like every angle. Like building it was a huge experience, like a learning experience. Like the tech behind it was all new to us, and even sort of like the gameplay design of how it plays out and how it ranks players and stuff. That stuff is like I can't even like. You know, we'd have to have several people from the team on here to even like remotely explain how all that stuff works. But that's been fascinating, because it's our first time doing a competitive mode, a competitive multiplayer mode, and you watch how your user base responds to it and how they talk about it and which pieces of the metagame that they latch onto and care about, and you know, you learn the things you're doing in the game that are like making them feel rewarded, and the things that they aren't feeling rewarded with respect to. So that's all been really interesting. I mean, we've even seen recently that a lot of our players are playing, you know, that they're really focusing on their rating. And even though pennant race is actually, you know, it's every week you play a sequence of games, and you want to win your pennant race each week. It's a week long competition. Then we see a lot of people that seem to care more about their rating versus the week long competition. So, and you know, we attribute that to like, you know, the fact that the rating is displayed so prominently in the UI and whatnot. So, you really learn about how your game communicates importance to the importance of the game systems to the community. And, you know, so we're actually, we got a big set of changes coming, to add a bunch more meat to pennant race that we didn't have, at launch. But that mode overall has been, a blast to build, and, you know, it's the one we're putting the most time into post launch, because we've learned it was impossible to get that to exactly what we wanted it to be at launch, because we just didn't have the information yet. It's a mode you have to put out there. You have to see how people are playing it, how they're talking about it, and then you have the information you need to make the next steps.
What else have you learned by watching how players are interacting with your game? For example, are there certain teams that get used a lot more? Are there certain players that may have a lot more success than others? When I mean players, I don't mean individual human players. I mean, you know, players that you've created in the game. Are, you know, have there been some things that you've seen that will make you go, okay, that's what we were hoping for, or ooh, might need to make some adjustments there, you know, whether it's teams, players, or you know, anything else for that matter?
Yeah, on the teams front, it's no secret that everyone has gravitated towards the power hitting teams. We put out some data the other day, not the other day, I guess it was a week and some ago, just about like what the team usage actually looked like. And you know, there's a lot of people playing with the power teams, and we dropped one hint in there that was that actually, hey, our data says the most successful team in this game mode, is actually one of the least, used teams. So I'm not going to say which one, you know, I don't want to blow that cover.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
But, you know, people definitely, there's probably teams that feel good to use right away. And it seems like everyone else is using them. So that's an easy reason. It's easy to convince yourself that should be the team that I'm using too. But, there are some, there's some other considerations that need to be kept in mind when picking your team. So that's been fascinating. Just seeing which teams are getting chosen, knowing what their strengths are, and which ones aren't getting chosen, even knowing their success rates. That's been a lot of fun.
One of my favorite things, and might sound a little silly, one of my favorite things about Super Mega Baseball is that it is a complete package, right? Not only does it play really well, but not only is there more to do, you know, there's plenty to do. You can sort of play offline, you can play online, you can play with a friend, you can play against a friend, you can do all sorts of those kind of things, some of which you could do in the original Super Mega Baseball and some you couldn't. But it also looks really good. Now, we're going to talk about sort of the player art style in a minute, but I mean, the stadiums look good, the colors are big and bright, you know, there's a lot going on. Is there sort of a prioritization that you have for, okay, well, you know, this is first, this is second, this is third when it comes to gameplay and looks and the audio and all those kind of things? I mean, the game overall just looks great instead of playing great. Where did the look and designing the visuals, especially now that you've got these super duper Xbox One X's and PS4 Pros and people are playing on 4K TVs, like, where did the visual sort of fall in priority and resources when it comes to building this game?
Really high, honestly. You know, you've heard the debate, you know, graphics versus gameplay, you know, how important, like, is it really, how important are the graphics?
Very,
you know,
it's, my opinion anyway, very important. Yeah.
You know what? I totally agree with you. And, I think, you know, Super Mega Baseball 1 was probably an interesting case study in that area, you know, like, cause that was a game that I think, you know, because of the way that it looked, I think that, it was, for lack of a better word, you know, a little off the beaten path in its visual design.
Well, that was by design, though, right? When we talked about it, you guys had a vision and you put it out there.
It was, but you know, we did realize, like, you know, like, a lot of people are not playing this game after making a quick judgment on it based on its appearance.
Okay.
So. We put that as really high priority for the second version. We said this thing needs to look a lot sharper. So we tore everything up. I think we rebuilt every freaking asset in that game, which is why it took so long to build. But even, you know, they're the same kind of, the stadiums are like the same places, the same concepts, but like everything in there has been replaced pretty much. You know, obviously the character art is very different. That was an area that we, you know, going back to earlier talking about, like, were we planning to make this thing a simulation as much as it is now? We found that the character proportions in the first game were actually far enough off from that of real people that it actually affected the ability to make the simulation of the game better. So that led, you know, cause I think they were about it's hard to tell with their huge heads, but the players in the first game are something like 9 feet tall, and they could jump, you know, a line drive into the right center field gap. They could jump and snag a ball out of the air at like 15, 18 feet in the air. So it gets pretty tough to balance your sim with those proportions. So that's why we went with, you know, pretty close to, they're still like lightly caricatured. Well, maybe not lightly. There's still caricatures of people in two, but the proportions are pretty close. They got big hands and maybe slightly larger heads than real people, but the height and the reach and the stride length are all pretty close to real world proportions. And that helped with the sim, and that was a big part of the presentation rework. So yeah. Rebuild all the assets, change the proportions of the characters to more realistic levels, and then we did just also like implement an entirely more modern art pipeline and more realistic rendering and just, you know, moving closer. I don't want to like compare it to like an AAA game at this point, but it's a lot closer, or, you know, it has a lot of that tech in there at this point, especially compared to the first game.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be frank. I really like the player design a lot more in Super Mega Baseball 2.
Yeah, you know, it was very polarizing area for sure.
You know, another area that to me seems to be born of, I don't want to say born of necessity because that's not true, but certainly another area that seems to be something that is vital for a game that is a sports game that is non-licensed is customization. There is a tremendous amount of customization that you offer, at least in some of the modes, as far as naming players and designing players. Where does customization sort of fit in your priorities, and what has your reaction been to what people have been able to do in Super Mega Baseball 2 when it comes to making the experience more their own?
Yeah, so like with presentation online and online play, customization was kind of like the other that was like the third big thing that we were trying to do with the sequel. So those three areas, like maybe not in any particular order, those three areas were the things for the sequel. And yeah, with customization, it's just you can open the game up to it just increases the replayability so much to be able to do whatever you want with it. We went almost like maybe even deeper with it than we needed to go. We spent a lot of time in the customization stuff, and I'm really proud with what the crew about what the crew was able to put together there. It does a lot of things compared to what SMB1 did. That's a huge leap in terms of everything you can do there, and it's been great so far. That was an area. I mean, people have been we've had great feedback on the customization stuff, and it's wonderful to have those systems in place going forward.
One of the other things that, and I mentioned this on the show before, one of the other things that is appealing in a very subtle way about Super Mega Baseball 2 is the fact that you've got guys and girls that are playing baseball, and they're it's not like, I don't think you guys have ever made a big deal about it. It's just, yeah, this is the game. And obviously when you have a, you know, sort of your own universe that you created, you can take liberties and do that. When did that, and I know this was the case in the original Super Mega Baseball 2, so it's not like this is new, but I mean, again, it's refreshing in not only that it just is, I think, a really fun way to make a game because you potentially bring more people in, right? Boys and girls being able to play a game and create versions of themselves, or at least, you know, see both, you know, guys and girls in the game. But, you know, when and how did that come in? I mean, was it something that you just decided a long time ago had to be the way? Was it organic? What feedback have you gotten about it? I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. Again, now that the game's been out in the wild for a while, again, the second version, it's not new. But talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there was like, you know, I think the history on how all that came together is interesting. Like, at some point way back, it was like, okay, we're building a sports game that isn't going to be licensed. So all of a sudden, all of these things that, you know, in a licensed game would already be decided for you, you know, who are right. these players?
Well, in out of the park baseball, we can't, you know, accurately portray a Major League Baseball team with anybody but the real Major League Baseball players, but that is not a weight that you have, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we were thinking, if this isn't going to be a licensed game, let's do you ever play any of those games back in the day? I'm trying to think of examples off the top of my head, but like sometimes games
backyard
would
baseball
go,
or something, you mean?
Well, with players that there was games that would almost like try to be licensed, but like they weren't licensed games, but they'd use the attributes of the players
sure.
or misspell the names and
oh,
stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
I actually really didn't like that. That was like, you know, that just it's a big red sign that says we don't have the license. and when we decided to go in a, on, you know, well, I mean, not like we had a choice. Our very first version of this game was going to be unlicensed no matter what. We said let's make this game different by like really going hard on the fictional world and the fictional players and the stadiums and the players, and a really easy decision as part of that was like, well, let's be inclusive here and have ladies on the field as well. Why not? I mean, there's no reason not to do that. And that just fell out of the design. So we ended up, we did ballparks in, they're not in specifically in real places, but they're takes on places all over the world. And you know, the teams are like pretty wide variety of team styles, like even in the art and stuff. So we just wanted to have a lot of fun with the look and feel of the teams and the environments and stuff. Having the ladies on the field was an easy choice to be part of that kind of direction.
Have you been surprised by reactions in any direction about that, or has has it kind of been like no big deal because it was never really mentioned as a big deal anyway?
Yeah, the latter actually, which is great.
That's what you want, right?
Nobody seems to be bothered by it, and we get lots of people making all sorts of crazy teams with all varieties of teams. So that's been great.
That's awesome.
Doesn't seem to be a big deal for anyone, and we're happy with that.
That's great. That's frankly how it should be, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
One of the things that I particularly find interesting about Super Mega Baseball 2 is the ability to play it a few different ways, right? It's not just player versus player. You can mix and match in how you play the game. How important was it to you to offer different kinds of experiences that really will change how you play a game when it comes to, one player or multiple players or co-op and versus and all that?
Yeah. We had the local like head-to-head play and co-op play in the first game. We did make some big improvements to the co-op part of that. The head-to-head local play got a lot of improvements for SMB2. But on the multiplayer front, I think that just came. I really think it's like a different group of people that are gonna play competitive online multiplayer versus those that want to play with their friends. I mean, I think playing kind of it's a much more casual experience to jump on with your brother or something and play a co-op season against the CPU than it is to, jump on your couch and play really seriously.
Absolutely.
So it's just, I feel like those are very different audiences. And we just wanted there to be something there for both of those audiences.
You know, one of my favorite experiences of the year in video games at all was very early on when Super Mega Baseball 2 came out, and Brian Pasta Padre and Pete Dodd, great friend of the show, and I, we were all on. We're like, hey, let's play some Super Mega Baseball, and it was the three of us, mm-hmm. and we just sort of accidentally did a two versus one, and it was great. I'm like, I can't believe I'm even doing this, right? It was Brian versus Pete and I. Pete and me, yeah. I can speak. Brian versus me and Pete, maybe. I don't even know. I'm going to get killed on Twitter for screwing this all up. But it was Brian versus
the two of us. They're going to remember the score, and they're going to give you shit.
And like when it's two of you, you sort of alternate pitching in an inning, and you alternate it's every other at bat, right? It makes sense. But then just the fact that we could just accidentally play two-on-one and that we could have fun while doing it was so cool. There's a lot of different iterations, ways that you can play it. I've sort of have there been anything that has sort of stood out to you and surprised you pleasantly with, we didn't really sort of think a whole lot about this thing, but it's happened and it's worked out great and is actually kind of sort of a hidden gem or diamond. Because like I've been telling everybody that two versus one in Super Mega Baseball, like it used to be, a lot of sports games, if you want to play the right way, you got to play, okay, it's just you versus another player. Or, if you're playing your online team mode, you got to have five versus five in basketball or whatever. How many sort of iterations have you seen and have, like I said, have been either happily surprised by or just like, oh, yeah, we didn't really sort of plan this to happen, but yeah, this works great, and this is going in the game.
I'll probably think of a good answer to that, and like, you know, right after we get off of the podcast here.
Had I prepared you by like sending questions before something, it probably would have helped you out. Instead, I'm just throwing all this stuff at you with no prep at all. Sorry about that.
That'd be no fun. The online modes are like they're a step from the local modes. So like the 1v1, 2v1, 2v2 play. We really wanted to like one of the design pillars on the game was like, let's make the online experience as similar as possible to the couch party experience. So like the experience, I suppose, that you're just talking about happening right there, like playing 2v1 with your buddies online.
With different mojo, different ego. I mean, that's crazy. Just the fact that I had like a 33 while Pete had like a 40 and Brian had a 50, and all self-chosen too, by the way. Yep. Like that interaction and that mix of numbers and players, my gosh, I can't imagine. That's really complex stuff.
Yeah, the handicap, the ego is a handicapping system in the game is something that I think works really well. And it worked pretty well in the first game too. So it's a carryover. And that experience you're talking about, like that was an experience you could have in the first game locally in front of one TV. And we just wanted that to be possible online. So like we really tried to design the online experience around the idea that like whether you're shared screen or whether you have a friend and you're playing against two friends in another city or something like that, like it's going to play as close as possible to local play when you're online. And hopefully that worked out. That experience that you're telling, that's great to hear because that is what we were going for with it.
So very interesting launch for Super Mega Baseball 2 in that you launched as part of Games with Gold on the Xbox on Microsoft platform, and you launched as a standard retail game, digital only, right? No physical release for Super Mega Baseball 2?
There's no physical. That's something that could happen in the future, but
it did happen after the launch of the original Super Mega Baseball, right? There was a retail release.
No, we didn't do. We didn't no retail on SMB1.
Okay, I thought you did for some reason. Okay,
we did Xbox and Steam well after the original launch, which was on PlayStation.
PlayStation, right?
So you're maybe thinking about that, but no retail.
Right. So this year, instead of launching just on one, or not this year, but this game. Instead of launching on just one platform, like Super Mega Baseball launched on the PlayStation and came afterwards, like you just mentioned, you went free is not the right term because you pay for Xbox Live, but you went, you know, we'll just say it. You went free on Xbox and you know, standard digital release on PlayStation 4. When did that come together, and what are some of the lessons that you learned from that? Because it's in 2018, as the video game industry continues to try to figure out, what do we want to do? Do we want to be digital? Do we want to be subscription? Do we want to be free to play with things that you get people to pay for afterwards? As the industry continues to just not know what we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. What was that? And I'd love to hear how that came together and sort of your thoughts on that, both before and after, now that you're a month out of that from that.
Yeah, yeah. I know you guys talk about this stuff on this podcast sometimes. And
some people say a lot too much, but I can't help it. I like it. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. I think it's super interesting, too. And you really do see the industry kind of trying to find its way with respect to this kind of, you know, premium versus microtransactions and DLC versus subscriptions, and everybody's trying all these different things. With this game and the launch we did, I mean, we were thinking about this type of thing like as far back as when the first game became a part of Xbox Gold, Games with Gold. So it's something that has been talked about for a long, long time. And you know, like it just like it really. The reason we decided to do that ultimately is like, you know, pretty much two things that won't surprise you at all. It's like, it's a major marketing initiative, especially like, you know, for a studio like us, like we're you know, still a relatively small team, not like a massive marketing budget. We got to get eyeballs on the game. And I mean, there's so many games out there. There's so many good, cheap games. There's so many good, like, expensive games with massive marketing budgets, and you're competing against all these games for
mindshare. Preach it.
It's brutal. And, you know, this was a way to, you know, get the game out there and have a lot of people see it. You know, would we have done that with like a story? If, you know, we're not a story driven game, we're a sports game, but, you know, it's the type of game that will, you know, probably do more of it. We'll see. You know, if it's a story game, launching into something like Gold might be kind of crazy because you can't really expect people to come back to it so much later. But that's different with a sports game. So yeah, you know, marketing. And then the other one this is a brand new competitive multiplayer game. And like, how many games have we seen in the indie or even AAA space dry up in terms of their multiplayer scene, like, quickly? There's so many options out there. We're seeing people gravitate towards in massive numbers towards a very small number of the games that are out there, you know, in some sense. So having any kind of like active multiplayer community is like not an easy thing to build. So we thought that this was a way to make sure that there was enough people online at launch, and thought that was really important. I was just gonna say, I don't know that if we had launched this game without like a promotion like this, you know, would there have been enough people online to have Pennant Race like really be a thing for some amount of time. I don't know. You know, you can't see both outcomes, obviously, but we knew that multiplayer user base was something that we really had to think about with the Pennant Race mode.
Did you catch any flack from, you know, Sony people, like saying, hey, what's going on? Or was everybody cool, basically? And I mean, I obviously, it's the internet, you're always going to have somebody, but I mean, relatively speaking, right? Has there been any concerns or any, you know, feedback, material feedback one way or the other, or has it worked out well for you on both platforms?
Well, you know, I think like there's some fans upset that you know, that, well, I remember there was we did a beta on Xbox and not PlayStation stuff, but ultimately I think the community came to understand that this was you know, ultimately doing that benefited the whole community. Like, it provided the online user base, it gets eyes on the game, it makes the game more popular, which is good for the whole community, for everyone that plays this game, no matter what platform you're on. So I think it went okay. It's hard to know what everyone thinks, but you know, it's a situation where we, you know, an opportunity was presented, and you know, we thought it was best that we take it this time.
I am a very vocal proponent of the Xbox Games Pass. I'm mm-hmm. a subscriber, and I think it makes my Xbox a lot more fun. Super Mega Baseball is one of the games on the Xbox Games Pass. I'm very interested to know your opinion on that. Did you see a big uptick in usage when your game got on there? There's a bunch of games on there, but it's certainly, you know, it can be found. And I'm just, your overall thoughts on it. I'd love to hear what you have to say.
It's tough to comment on that one because we did, I can't remember how the exact timing panned out, but we did Gold on the first game, Xbox Gold, Games with Gold for Super Mega Baseball 1. I forget what month it was in, but then, so it's hard to kind of tell where our numbers are coming from, like how much of that is people that downloaded it with Gold versus people that are playing it through Game Pass.
Sure.
It's really hard to tell that apart.
Yep.
But I think I think it's a, you know, Game Pass and PlayStation Now are really interesting services.
Are you on PlayStation Now as well?
No. Okay. Oh, yes. Yeah. No, we're on both.
Oh, great. And I didn't even realize that. Okay. So you can get the original Super Mega Baseball on Games Pass or on PlayStation Now. That's awesome.
Yeah, they're interesting. They're really interesting programs, and you know, I imagine people like Super Mega Baseball, if you get into it, you can play it for 120, 160 hours, whatever you want. So it's probably, you know, they probably like that aspect of it. But you know, they're cool programs and they're really great for, you know, especially games like in the middle tier that they're not big enough to be like massively advertised to everyone. But they're still really thorough, interesting, well-made games. Like those programs are great for games like in that class, I think.
Couldn't agree more. Totally agree. You know, you mentioned the team a couple of times. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about them. Video games are made by people, by human beings. Metalhead Software is a small group. I'd love for you to talk about a few of the people on the team behind Super Mega Baseball 2. What are some of the people and what do they do and what do they contribute?
Yeah, we had 5 employees at the time that we shipped SMB1, and we're 13 now. And then we've always had a handful of people doing, you know, part time or contract work on the side. So, there was probably something like on the first game, maybe a total of like 8 to 10 people had worked on it, with like kind of the core team being 5 or 6 or 7. And this time, maybe 25 people in total, with the core team being more like 15 or 16 kind of thing. So, it's a little different than before. I feel like we're still a small enough studio that we can still all meet in one room, and we do that. We do that once or twice a week, get in the same room and just talk about things. And when we do break into teams, there's not that many teams. It's just a handful. But, you know, the art team, Tobin and Dan and Alex did a great job. The art team is only 3 people on this title. I mean, or at least the full-time in-house art team is only 3. So they did all the character art, all the animation, and all the stadiums, like just the 3 of them. So I think that's a heck of a lot of high quality art to get churned out by just a few guys. Pretty great. And then there would have been about, let's see, 8 of us that programmed, that did all the programming stuff, and really proud. I don't want to enumerate every single person. I'm going to end up forgetting someone and then feeling super bad. But I think the tech team as a whole did like an unbelievable job on this game. That there's the customization systems and the fact that we rebuilt like the whole UI and got a pretty good start on some complex multiplayer game modes and features. That's a lot of stuff. You know, and it all runs at 60 FPS, no matter what piece of hardware you're playing on. I think they did an unbelievable job on that. There's a lot of people behind the scenes. I'm not going to try to name every single person, but it's been a delight to feel like that with this game that there isn't just one person that knows how to deal with each area of the game. Like that's something you feel that in a really small team, and I'm sure a lot of indie developers are familiar with that feeling, where it's like if someone isn't there that week, you just can't make progress on a particular area. And I think we've made a lot of leaps and strides there, where there's some overlap, and instead of one person just slaving over a particular problem and trying to figure out how to deal with it, there's someone else that they can talk to about it and try to figure out what the next step is. Not in every area of the game, but we're getting better on that front. And that's one of the like main pains of being a really small developer that is nice. I love is starting to go away a little bit as we get a little bit bigger here.
So can't let you go without asking about what's happening now and what's happening next. Now, you mentioned you continue to support the game, delivering updates and things like that. So talk a little bit about your plans for the near future, whatever you're able to and comfortable saying, and what fans of Super Mega Baseball 2 can continue to look forward to.
Yeah, we've already kind of noted some stuff that we're going to push into this game. There's some promised features. Some of them are already in. Some of them we're still working on. We're probably going to stick with SMB2 kind of through the summer here, at least. We'll see how things are going. So there's some more content coming. There's some more features coming. Then we have some damn hard decisions to make, I suppose. You know, we've talked about, like, certainly there's evidence that we can keep doing this game and have that work out all right. And, you know, but we've also, of course, the idea of doing different sports has come up. Obviously, people request that all the time. You know, there's a few different directions we could take. And we have not made that decision yet. And we're not, like, this summer, honestly, is a little bit about just recovering from that tough, challenging launch for our first time doing a multi-plat launch. So we're going to slow down a bit this summer, you know, more SMB2 for now. And we have not decided what's next. And we may not even make that decision until a little further into this summer.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Scott Drader, the co-founder of Metalhead Software, makers of the great Super Mega Baseball 2. Thank you for being on here. We appreciate it. Anything else that you want to mention before we let you get out of here?
I don't think so. I think I got to say plenty. Thank you for having me, and hopefully it's not like 2 years until I'm back on here again.
Sounds great. You are welcome anytime and every time to talk about anything. So, right. Open invitation to you, sir.
Thanks, Rich. Cheers.